The following podcast is not relating to my teachings and work at Del Cid Medical Center and is for entertainment purposes only.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Life of Flow. Today, we're having actually our second podcast that's a case, and obviously, we've come up with the incredibly smart and very unique name of Case
Cast.
Yeah, we were able to put that together alone. Any external intervention, we came up with that amazing name. Before we delve into the case, I would like to appreciate the fact that we have had a lot of people interested, a lot of people actually wanting to help the pod. And last week, we just closed a round of interviews, and we have selected our first scientific editor and advisory board member for Life of Flow, and that's Dr. Luis Felipe Cabrera from Colombia. He's a vascular surgeon who has been doing some phenomenal work, young guy, pushing forward, being very, very interested in education and diffusion throughout the internet. So to Dr. Cabrera, thank you very much for being part of the scientific and editorial board of Life of Flow.
Thank you, Luis. Anyway,
Lucas, this is a case that we put together because we thought it could be interesting, and it dates back to December 2023. Of course, as with a lot of these patients of ours, things are slow, and patience is of utter importance. This is a patient with a no-option CLTI, was determined by the physicians that were caring for him, and this was actually still while the patient was under their purview, not necessarily when I was involved, but this is the last angiographic image we have. I'll show you the wound here in a second. Mm-hmm. But essentially, they showed that the anterior tibial died at the foot, that there was a small tarsal, and that was it. There was no posterior tibial, and there was very poor perineal with very poor outflow. The wound was, I would say, on a global guideline, that CLTI Wi-Fi score of 1, ischemia 3, and foot infection 0. Yeah. So, you know, when we see these patients, we are really keen to trying to get a good ultrasound. Even though we have an angiogram, it's important for us to understand other things. Specifically, what we're looking for is to A, confirm that these angiographic images that we were shared are in fact what's happening. A lot mm-hmm. of times, I'm sure it's happened to you. You get a referral for a no option CLTI patient with a, you know, maybe a poor quality angiogram, maybe a catheter placed very high up in the leg, or maybe mm-hmm. a lot of movement. And when we do an ultrasound, we realize that the loop is open, that the patient has outflow, and that maybe the patient can qualify for regular standard angio-angio. Has this happened to you before?
Yeah. I mean, I do a fresh angiogram on every single patient I'm referred to.
Yeah. Are you, when you go into those angiograms, are you essentially ready to treat, like to do an UVA, or are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I tell the patient
an alternative, we'll do that.
Yeah. I tell the patient that, you know, there might be an option to do traditional revascularization. And the, but if there isn't, that will proceed.
Right. I think that's important because I have heard a few comments about, well, now everybody's DBA. Well, that's not true. As a matter of fact, the pain and the anguish that comes with a DBA is a lot. And so I think that as much as I can avoid it, I can. It's just unavoidable sometimes. But if we can avoid it, of course we're going to try, because usually the results are much better and patients, you know, get out the door quicker. Okay. So anyway, this is what we do on our scans, and shout out to our amazing Jill Somerset, who has been here before But what we, you know, this was one that we were lucky enough to have her around. And as you can see, she's essentially confirming the initial findings of this angiogram, right? She's saying that the loop is essentially down. There's mm-hmm. no lateral plantar artery. There's no dorsalis pedis. There is just the tarsal artery. She actually went on and made a beautiful diagram from an AP view here on the bottom right, showing where that tarsal branch is coming off the proximal dorsalis pedis. It's still patent, but that distally there's no flow. And even more so, she went on to give us the information of the loop, showing that the medial margin was 3 millimeters. The lateral plantar vein is 4 to 6 millimeters, a very beautiful, juicy LPV. Mm-hmm. And that the saphenous vein is also of good quality, although it becomes a little bit small towards the bottom, starting at 5, going down to 4, and then eventually 3 millimeters. I still think this could have been a good HISA case if I saw it. I thought that that there was no appropriate options for endo. But yeah, we felt very confident that we were going to go in and perform a DVA of the posterior tibial artery for this particular patient. So this patient was referred to us, I want to say, mid-February. The DVA eventually got done at the end of the month. And so by March, he comes for follow-up. And what we see on the follow-up is a few things. Is we see that the DVA is widely patent. The volume flows that have been shown on ultrasound are 190 to 200. There is a stenosis in the proximal third of the SFA, and there seems to be a high degree stenosis of the lateral plantar vein. The velocities, for those that are not seeing this chart, approximately were 300 and above in the SFA and in the LPV, it was 330 and above. I think a lot of this, you know, can be tricky because as there are a lot of diameter changes, there could be a lot of turbulence. And I think that could overestimate sometimes these flow patterns.
And as a circuit matures from a low resistance to a high resistance circuit, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, how do you interpret the hemodynamics when you essentially now have a very low resistance circuit? I think, you know, a lot of these numbers in retrospect will have to probably aggregate in a pretty good meta-analysis. Yeah. So if there's anybody out there trying to find some work, I think aggregating some significant amount of data from hemodynamic studies is going to be really good because we have to potentially rewrite the way that we look at these. Cool. But, you know, one of the things is that this cycle, this is early on. This is about, I want to say, maybe 2 to 4 weeks out from the DVA. And there is no evidence of maturation at this point. How do we say that? Or how do we go on to say that? Well, a few things. One is the timeline for maturation based on data is about 6 weeks. And above, the more you wait, the better. The wound also reacts in a very different way. You actually sometimes see granulation tissue growing at the base of the necrotic tissue, and that's a very telling sign. Also, the ultrasound can show you know, speckled perfusion of the tissue. We've been looking into this in detail, and I don't have anything mature at this point to tell you about it, but we've been looking about what the best ways are to try to define this. But then angiographically is also something that we can show, and I guess that's part of the objective of today is what are you looking on your angiogram that could tell you that you may, you know, may be ready for the next phase, meaning the surgical reconstruction of the foot, if any, is needed. Please.
As far as maturation, you know, there is the venous incompetent, the incompetence of the venous circuit into the metatarsal veins and then into Legere's plexus. And I can see how you could see that on ultrasound. and you can definitely see it on an angiogram. But what about the neoangiogenesis? Like, what is maturation? Is it just when you have flow into the... What do you consider? I mean, who knows what it is, but what do you consider? Yeah. Is it when you have flow into the into those metatarsal veins, into the Legere's plexus, or is it when you start seeing neoangiogenesis? What do you consider?
Yeah. You know, I think that whenever you're doing something really novel, it's important to establish some basic goals. And this lingo is also as novel as a technique. But it seems like for us, there are two critical moments that we need to know after the procedure. And so procedure is done. And inevitably, what we're all trying to do is to heal the patient. So I guess the best definition of what that first term, which is, well, what does maturation mean? Well, in our, from our optics, maturation is the point in which the vasculature is feeding enough, perfusing enough the ischemic tissue that it can undergo a successful podiatric surgery. Mm. That's maturation. Now, do I have an objective number at this point? The answer is no. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a combination, like I said, between time from initial procedure, wound appearance, and some non-invasive findings, and then last but not least, the angiographic findings, if you do happen to have them. I'm not saying everybody deserves an angiogram to decide if you need to operate the toe or not, but it's, if you do have it, then you can find some signs there. That aggregate amount of knowledge should give you a comfortable position to say, I'm going to proceed with the toe amputation or the TMA or whatever that patient needs. And the vasculature is not an issue. Now, don't forget, you still have to fight infection and wound healing. And obviously, you know, a lot of these patients, if their hemoglobin A1C is off the charts, then that's going to be a problem. But at least from the vascular standpoint, you may be in a good position. The third term, or the second term, I guess, that we've been trying to work around is a thing we've coined conversion. Well, what does conversion mean? Conversion means that the circuit is mature enough to where if it obstructs, if it occludes, if it goes down, you are going to have improved baseline perfusion left behind, or improved perfusion left behind despite the obstruction, to where you don't have to worry about reopening. And why is that important? Well, because you are inevitably going to see some restenosis above or restenosis below. Mm-hmm. And the question is, who deserves primary assisted or secondary patency interventions? So you do the DVA, you want to know when it matures so that you can go on to heal the foot and operate. But you also want to know when the circuit's converted, meaning that that you don't have to chase the DVA forever and ever, because most of us allow the natural history of the DVA to be, which is it occludes at some point.
Well, some people don't. Hmm? Some people keep it open forever, try to keep it open forever.
Yeah, I mean, I've got stories of people that have a five-year-old DVA that's still patent, yes.
Yeah.
I guess a small amount of them may just...
No, I'm saying some physicians try to keep it open.
Oh, I understand what you mean. Yeah, okay. I'm sure that. So I don't think that's... I wouldn't advocate for that. Like, if somebody is healed, if somebody is in remission, and the DVA has been there for, I don't know, 6 months or so, I feel very comfortable in letting that patient obstruct. So if I get a duplex that says that there's a 95% stenosis at the edge of the DVA, I'm going to let it go.
Yeah.
But how nice would it be if there could be anything you could look at to give you the certainty that that patient doesn't depend on the DVA for perfusion?
Yeah, wouldn't that be TCPO2?
Well, we think that it probably has to do with proving that in the absence of it, by some sort of occlusive maneuvers, you can still have flow, and that flow is enough. We're extrapolating a lot of the know-how from like upper extremity fistulas, right? When you're trying to determine steel versus non-steel, that's the fistula open or closed.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something to be considered.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I mean, I guess that would be nice, right? To get to a point where you can be like, hey, you know, do some occlusive procedures, and then I can tell. Mm-hmm. And then you tell yourself, okay, well, listen, the natural history is going to occlude, and we're just let it be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, I see now where you're going with it.
You understand, yeah. So yeah. I want to have a DVA. I want to show what I need to do for that.
I think I know how you're doing it.
Yeah, okay. I want to mature, and I don't, and then I want to, you know, make sense if it's converted or no.
Yeah,
and it's not that I don't want to share with you. It's that we're just literally trying to figure it out. So I don't think that we have anything well thought out at this point to put it out there officially, right? And of course, we'll put some scientific papers behind this, but we're doing data aggregation. So this is that angiogram early on that shows that region in the popliteal, and there was one in the SFA that were touched up. But probably more important than that, this obviously was a very quick ambulatory procedure. But more important than that is show you that the arch, you know, the loop is intact. The outflow is over two main vessels, the medial marginal and the lateral marginal vein.
Mm-hmm.
The medial marginal, if you look at the image on the right, the medial marginal vein is obviously goes on the medial aspect of the foot and then drains up the GSV. The lateral does the same and then drains up the SSV.
Yeah.
And so you can probably get a catheter all the way into that arch and then back in to either of these vessels and coil embolize them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also, you know, if you feel comfortable enough, you can also take a scalpel and make a small incision and ligate. And that takes, you know, 0.1 seconds.
Yeah.
So what I did is looking at this image and knowing that the medial marginal tends to be our first focus, I did a distal ligation about midfoot, not too close to the ischemic area, but not too above in the ankle. And I know you'll probably ask me why, and the answer is I don't know. I just thought it was an easy area, and I could see this medial marginal vein pulsating on ultrasound. It was very, very easy to find it.
Yeah.
And so we just made a small incision. And like, why? Well, our intention is to try to pressurize the system forward.
Yeah.
Increase the outflow resistance and try to push things along as maturation has not clearly happened here, right? Yeah. Why? Because you see that there is no flow past the metatarsals. Like all of the valves in the metatarsal area are still continent. There's no reflux. And so this is just flyby oxygen.
So two questions. When you did the index procedure, why didn't you coil the GSV right off the bat? And second question, why didn't you try to open one of those valves? Or did you?
The flow volumes on the initial procedure were around 100 to 150. Yeah. And so I didn't feel that there was a need to do it at that time. But raising the, you know, doubling at a month at 200 now, and seeing that we still haven't had any maturation.
Yeah. I don't think it doubled. I think the sheath decreases your flow volumes. So that's kind of what I found out because I recently did one and my flow volumes were 80. And then I took the sheath out. It did it, like finished the procedure, did it again, and it was 300. And I was like, oh, man. But I had coiled the GSV at that point.
Well, you know, I already knew this from before. Remember many, many years ago, I was doing research with a company regarding micro-oxygen sensors in the foot.
Yeah, you told me about it. Yeah.
And one of the things that we noticed was that the oxygen perfusion dropped significantly when you put your sheath in.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why I actually close these. So I'll put an angio seal, mm-hmm. and then I measure flow volumes. Mm-hmm. And then that's why I normally just do an open ligation, because at that point the sheath is out. Mm-hmm. So unless you do some sort of conversion, and we've talked about this, like unless I have the capacity of knowing what my baseline was with and without the sheath, it's hard to assess what the true flow volume is.
Yeah.
So this was a sheathless flow volume, if you want to overcomplicate the conversation, versus a non-sheathless or versus a sheath plus volume. But this was a sheathless volume of about 150.
Yeah.
And then it grew. I mean, I've seen that. Like sometimes the flow volumes, also the anesthesia is involved. Like maybe if I measured the flow volumes a day later, maybe they're already higher.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, this could have been already there. But we do know also that even if it's not for flow modulation, it's important that we occlude some of these outflow vessels for maturation, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So this, you know, unfortunately, there was a little break of communication. This is an external podiatrist. This is not a case that I was doing completely with our HOPE team. So despite my attempts to relay a message that, you know, wait, and or wait until I tell you to do it, and then let's talk about the surgical technique, the patient was pushing the podiatrist to get it done. He had some Doppler assessments bedside, and he felt very comfortable that the flow was right, and he did the amputation and then did a primary closure, as you can see here on the image. For those of you that are not seeing, it's essentially a toe amputation with a running suture of the surgical incision. And now there's, you know, the edges of the incision are all ischemic and puffy, and there's a lot of redness. And so he sent it back to me and he said, hey, I think there's a problem with the blood flow. When we do our ultrasound images, what we show is that the blood flow is actually pretty good. And what's interesting is that the flow volume is now increased somewhat throughout the, you know, when I had already ligated that medial marginal vein. The flow volume calculations at this ultrasound in the mid portion were 400 and 300, but in the LPV, the flow volume was 58. And so, very confusing to me, some of this information. I want to say that we're also starting to see high resistance in the outflow because now there is maturation. We start to understand that there is some Doppler flows closer to the skin and that there is a significant amount of pulsatility in and around the wound, which wasn't there.
Yeah.
So for me, this means that this has matured. For me, this means that from a vascular standpoint, the patient is doing okay. But obviously, from an incisional standpoint, the patient's not doing great. The wound was closed primarily. We know that's a no-no. And we had to wash it, open it. And so we took him to the hospital. For those of you that are not looking at it, I'll describe. We just opened the amputation site, cleaned it, washed it, and left it open with the intention to let it close with secondary intention. Obviously, got some cultures, started the patient on antibiotics, and he was overall doing okay.
Does he stay on antibiotics, and do you back it, or how do you manage it?
You know, this is a very complex little area to back. When you're between the toes, it generates a lot of holes. It's hard to seal, and then when they seal, we've seen a lot of plastic that ends up cutting through the other toes. And so when you have an intradigital wound, we tend to just be very aggressive with local wound care, but we don't vacuum.
What do you do? Do you do like collagen? What do you do?
Yeah. I mean, depends on what you're looking for, but it could be a combination of hydrogels. It could be fluorogel. It could be Santyl. You know, you can use some like AG, some of these silver coverings to cover the wound. And then
a lot of alginate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of washing. We use fascia a lot for these wounds. And so,
Well, you see them at Hope weekly?
We do. Yeah. But, you know, this is a daily problem. And a lot of times these patients don't have the capabilities of helping themselves. They have maybe mobility or independent living issues. And we depend on a home health service that's appropriate. And that is also a problem sometimes.
Yeah.
They'll skip or they won't do it or they don't think that they need to do what we tell them to do. And so it's a little bit hard sometimes with home health.
Yeah.
So we continue to see this patient. He's doing well overall. Now we're in June. So let's say initial procedure was March. So marzo, abril, mayo, junio. So this is now 3.5-4 months post-op. We essentially get a duplex surveillance. We're doing local wound care. That wound is filling up nicely. Things are moving in the right direction. And we get an ultrasound that reports the edge of the DBA has 351 cm per second. And that's, you know, a potential issue where we may have, you know, the necessity to do assisted primary patency, right? The other things that are very interesting is that now it's not only patent, but it's matured by our definition of maturity. We've talked about this here. And so I think that at this point, the decision is, you know, do you touch it up or do you not touch it up? The wound is still open, and we believe that there's a need to make sure that this continues going in the right direction. And that's essentially at the point where we want to bring you guys into the OR. We decided that this patient probably needed a look-see for sure of that 351. Now, could it be changes in hemodynamics? Could it be maybe that there's an overcall of an area? I'm not sure, but at the same time, I don't want to find out with an occluded DVA in the setting of maturation and in the setting of still an open wound. So, you can criticize the decision to go and do a second look, but that's what we elected to do. We wanted to make sure everything was moving in the right direction. We talked to the patient. Patient was in agreement. The tissue was clean, clear, granular. But, you know, I don't want to drop the ball at this
point. Yeah, I mean, the moment things start going backwards, it's difficult to regress it.
Settle back, yeah.
Yeah.
And this guy's been through so much, right?
I mean,
at this point, it's not that he's losing hope, but they start getting frustration.
Doubts,
and they get mixed signals from other practitioners or providers. The primary care tells them that something's going wrong. The home health nurse says something doesn't look good. And then that just creates a lot of problems for us.
Yeah.
So communication in these cases tends to be, an absolute necessity. So let's stop here, Lucas. Let's jump into the case. Hopefully, we won't reiterate a lot of what we said here at the front end. But what we're going to show you through the case, I think, are very interesting things. Not only about this one lesion that was an actual lesion, but the signs of maturation and how this circle has evolved.
Yeah, you can do this. Yeah. Goes fast. That looks okay. Okay, AJ, let's go down with the OCR, please. All the way to the footsie. All right, we're going to go all the way down. All the way down. All right there. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And we'll go ahead and get a nice image here. Go ahead and open the collie a little bit for me. Yep. These are all twoies, huh? Okay. All right. Let's see what this looks like on the bottom. This is an arterialization that by all means we've demonstrated that it's maturing in his wound is doing good. That's fine. Let me time that a little bit better. You can see a little bit of Lajar's, and you can see a little bit of blush here in the late faces. Not a whole of other stuff other than some collaterals coming there late. Go ahead and call me, please. You can see this is where I'll open the collimation a little bit. That's good. You can see here's where the transition is. A little longer than I would have liked that stent, but I'm guessing that we were limited by some of the distances that we were working with. Let's see. I mean, right thus far, I haven't been impressed with anything that I've seen here. Okay, so that's the top. Let's go. Maybe there's a little edge stenosis. We can drop an IVUS here and figure it out. You see those, this is definitely a class 2. There seem to be the AT ends up in these collaterals. And then those collaterals kind of come in late, but then you have the, the entire flow in the circuit is already going. I'm going to consider also getting an AP view image. Let me see if he's got that foot very averted. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. Let me see what all I can do. Can you give me orange, AJ? Are you able to drop the serum a little bit further that way or no? Right there. Uh-huh. Thank you. See if we have a good image here that shows us the distal edge of the arterialization. Like there's a little bit of flow in there. See a little more contrast. Yeah, it seems like a significant amount of it is actually reaching the distal toes. There you can see it in the very end of that image. I can work a little bit the pixel shifting here shortly, but you see it there. I mean, it's the valves of the loop have been essentially created or rendered, insufficient, and that propels forward flow. And then after those veins, you see that there's actually terminal evidence of terminal perfusion with wound blush. It's not impressive, but this patient is doing well. He's granulating, and I think his pain has been more controlled. And also, we've found some of this signals on all ultrasound too. So let me go ahead and lock my orange, please. Lock orange and lock the CRM so that it doesn't move that much. Thank you. Okay. I'll go ahead and review these images one more time. See what I think about them. There may be a little edge stenosis, but otherwise I'm unimpressed with what I'm seeing. I was a little concerned because the duplex shows some other things. Let me look at the duplex. The duplex says that there's a 256 inch velocity on the right at the edge of the stent, I think. And then there's a 287 and the distal popliteal. Maybe I'll image the distal popliteal in a different projection. Could it be that little thinned out area? Not that much, huh? I don't know. Let me see. Let me go here and give you all a different projection. Maybe that can help us, huh? Let's see. Let's do this. Kind of this more acute projection. Let's see if we find anything there. If not, I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to drop a duplex. Yeah, it's a very soft call. Go ahead and give me a command ES and an IVUS catheter, please. I don't see that there's any good reason here. If what we were aiming for is primary assisted patency, I don't necessarily think that there's a significant enough, at least angiographic image, to assess. One may think that potentially the presence of the arterialization throws some of the velocities of the system off, and that there's a little bit of overcall from what may potentially be a moderate stenosis. Can I have a introducer dilator, please? Okay. All right, so what I'm going to do here is just to confirm these findings and to assess the edge of the stent. I'm going to actually put an IVUS down. I think that can help. And I guess get categorically make me feel a little bit better about just leaving this like as is. Let me get you that image. We can actually go all the way down. We can assess the crossing here because I think it'll be an interesting image, and we can get dead wire all the way into the foot. Make sure that we're not concerned about any of what we're seeing here. All right. All right, y'all. Yeah, the gold one. Got it. Another one. Let me see. Go. that probe all the way into the venous system here. There you go. You want to change me to IVUS, please? All right, so that's the lateral plantar vein, nice and juicy. Go ahead and record. All right, I'm going to pull back on this lateral plantar vein. Looks very good. We come into the stent. Oh, there's a little bit of... There's some degree of growth here as you see it. Right? Like right here. That seems to be something to consider. I'd say this is about, maybe about 50% of the lumens. Going to keep pulling back to the stent in the posterior tibial vein. Those are probably the two extrinsic compressions that are happening at the ankle. Those things, usually we are very judicious about cutting them on the initial procedure. But this gentleman is already out for a considerable amount of time. So I'm not... That's the crossing into the posterior tibial artery. And quite frankly, it doesn't seem to be stenotic. This is to show how there's actually not that much in-crimping by the stent into the proximal edge of the posterior tibia. And I believe that was the crossing from artery to stent. Yeah, I want to go back to that. See, right here, that could be a little bit of an issue. Yeah, I would say if you look at the amount of material right here, it's probably a little bit more significant. And my experience here is a coronary stent probably does really well. So I'm going to just go ahead and do a direct coronary stenting of that area. See, this is the area where the ultrasound had called. Let me go and find where my probe is. That's the, that's essentially the TP trunk. Let me see, there's some plaque there. This seems to be into the distal popliteal. Here's where there was some concern. I guess that's it, but not super impressed about it. And then this is the SFA. Slows the calcium all the way out. All right, go ahead and stop recording, please. Go live again. I mean, I'm not overly impressed by that lesion. This obviously was angioplasty before. This is right at the edge. I'm going to get an angiogram of this image. You guys aren't seeing this, but I'm going to go ahead and do a quick angiogram. If you want to change AJ to the angio, let's show them what this thing looks on the screen like. You know, it's, I'm guessing that's showing you. It's showing how that lesion there is a little dissected, but I'm really not convinced that this is something that we have to worry about. So anyway, I think, let me go get the edge of the stent too. Make sure I'm okay with this. This may be the only thing that I'm a little bit more concerned with. Can you go back to IVUS? I'm coming right now at the edge of the stent. right there. This is potentially where I'm a little concerned. Go back to Andrew. See, it's right at the edge of the stent. And that's where I've seen a lot of my failures in the past, is at the edge of the stent. I'm going to go ahead and probably just drop the coronary stent in here. Let me see what we have sizes-wise. I'll go shopping here for a quick second. You'll give me a promos 3524, please. Just going to go ahead and do direct stenting of that lesion. That's where I've seen a lot of this, the two edges, right? The proximal edge and the distal edge tend to be the areas where we've recognized a little bit more disease. So let's go ahead and make sure that there's nothing here that is going to potentially put this arterialization at risk. After this, I've got Jill around who is going to help us look at the ultrasound post-operative. And I think we have some interesting images that we can show you about what this plantar perfusion may look like. That sometimes is the angiogram may not be, unless you do a very, very, very selective angiogram into the lateral plantar, almost with increased perfusion, you normally get a little bit better images. But this hemodynamic thought of getting a duplex image that can prove that we've got some degree of maturation that can help. All right, remember this is a balloon expandable stent, guys. Give me an endoflator. All right, I'm going to come down with this stent. I like that. That way we... This is a Promus stent, 3.5 by 24. We'll go ahead and deploy it here into this proximal edge of the stent. Mm-hmm. Negative. Air out. Good. Thank you. Okay. Perfect. That looks good. Then go ahead and pull that, get an image. If we're happy with that, we're essentially going to be done here. Yeah. Happy with that. And that's about it. Appreciate everybody looking at this. We're going to look at the, we're going to transition now to the images of the ultrasound and see what we can learn from this arterialization that by our impressions is already shown signs of maturation. And so stick around. Okay. So can I get a 6 French and a super sheath, please?
6 French kelp, super sheath?
Yep. It's done.
All right. So we're back. I guess I just want to start with this slide. Hopefully you are seeing this, but if you're not, I can describe it. Is the AP view of the loop in in the early, mid, and late phases of the DSA showing A, that the medial marginal vein is ligated. We ligated this on that past procedure. Remember, we did that to improve maturation. Mm-hmm. But what's nice now is that we have metatarsal flow through at least 1, 2, 3 of those metatarsal vessels, and then late flow even into the toe area with with that. And mind you, I don't use anything other than 2 mL of contrast on a C-arm. So if I were to do this with full contrast in a probably a better equipment, you'd see something more outstanding. Any comments at this point with this images, Lucas?
No, I mean, I think this is kind of what you want to see at this point. At this point, my mindset transitions to wound care podiatry. You know, at this point, I'm thinking, okay, this is as good as it's going to get.
Yeah.
Just keep it open, but it's like full on wound care, full on podiatry mode.
Yeah, I think this term of maturation is important. The maturation is shown, right? You now have a mature circle. It's going, it's flowing to the right point. At this point, your mind from a vascular standpoint, agree, changes. Now the focus is all on toe and not flow.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be this lingering question that you're inevitably going to find some restenosis along the circuit. At what point is it converted to where you don't care if it goes down or not? In a setting of an open wound, most people will continue chasing it. But I also think that may not be all entirely right. I think that in an open wound with certain conversion parameters, you should be safe to say it's probably going to go in the right direction.
Yeah.
So again, to just show this, you know, I put early and late images for you to check on. You could see on the left-hand side, that was our early angiogram. On the right-hand side, you see the absence of the medial marginal outflow, and you see the significant increase in perfusion outside of the circle. And I think that's very telling. That's what we call maturation. July, just to give you an update on where this patient is, you know, unfortunately, infection will continue to forever be a problem. And this patient, even though on the left-hand side of the screen, you see there was the wound had filled up very nicely. He was doing fine. He was going in the right direction. He came with a very foul odor, and there was a disconnect with home health. They stopped going, something about an order. And unfortunately, now we have ongoing infection that needs to be resolved. So we did do a third toe amputation there and washed them. And this is what it looks like now. And at this point, I think that the conversation is going to be, do we consider a TMA or do we consider, you know, to try to heal up that from the inside out, get it nice and clean, control the infection, potentially use some skin substitutes to grow it up and eventually let it close by secondary intention.
Yeah.
That's a question maybe for another show where we can dive into the biomechanics and what it's going to take to do the TMA. But that's where we are. That says this happened 5 days ago. So I'm giving you the latest of this particular case. Your thoughts here, Lucas, what would you do
this is the point where like my anxiety starts going up because, you know, you've done all this work. There's, you know, these infections can be very aggressive. So I, you know, after listening to a couple of conferences by Giacomo Clerici, I'm pretty aggressive. So I would be highly tempted to do a guillotine TMA.
Yeah. I would say that the if you ask me what in your team that I would say that, you know, a team very aggressive on vascular, the one thing that's kicked us in the butt with DVAs is infection.
Yeah.
100%. It has been maybe the 1, 2, 3 patients that I can think of in the past 12 months that we had a perfectly going DVA. Everything was going fine. And the infection went just ballistics. Like it tracked over the tendons. These are open wounds. Osteomyelitis is, you know, so I do agree with you that one should understand that once they are perfused and matured, they can turn into wet gangrene and it can be a significant infection. And one has to be very hyper aware of that because you can lose that leg very quickly.
Yeah.
Any final comments here before we let these fine people go on with their days?
No, I mean, this is a great case. Still to just, this is at the most difficult moment, which is like take it over the finish line. I feel like that's something that we still need to perfect or finesse something. But still a great case.
I'll keep you posted for sure. As we do more case casts, maybe I could do some follow-up. It'd be nice to, this is July 2024. We'll, you know, it'd be good to see where he's at in September, October. Hopefully yes. We'll show you a heel patient.
Hopefully.
All right. Thank you everybody out there for being with us. It's always a pleasure. And I didn't realize I've been showing you the background of my room the entire time. So
this is the second time we've done that, actually.
Did I blur it last time or I didn't?
You did not blur it. No.
Well, there you go. This is my room. Welcome to my house. All right, y'all. Thank you very much for being here and we'll be in touch. Ciao.
Bye. Bye.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.